Okay, so today I want to discuss two more mitzvahs that are, again, they seem not that relevant nowadays, but we'll show how they are relevant nowadays as well. This actually can be grouped into three mitzvahs. One mitzvah, well, if you want to know the numbers, the first mitzvah, we're actually going a little out of order here. The first mitzvah is number 186, next one's going to be 439, then 440.
So, Sefer
Chinuch, Sefer Chinuch mostly. So the mitzvahs that we're discussing are mitzvahs of bringing sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash. That's going to be our main discussion. There are actually three different relevant mitzvahs in the Torah. One mitzvah relevant is not to do shechita on a karbon outside the Beis HaMikdash. And that prohibition is on the shechita, on the slaughtering of it. One is not to actually offer the karbon, meaning burning it, or offering it on a mizbeach, on an altar outside the Beis HaMikdash. And then there's a positive command to bring all sacrifices to the Beis HaMikdash. So those are three related mitzvahs. They all go together. You find the first mitzvah I mentioned, I'm not shechting it, not doing a shechita, not slaughtering it, as the Beis HaMikdash is found in Parshas Acharimos. And it says over there, and I'm going back to Vayikra, Perek Yud Zayin, it says, Daber al Aaron vel banam, speak to Aaron and to his children, and to all Bnei Yisrael, and say to them, Zedavar Shor Siva Hashem Limor. This is what Hashem commanded. Ish Beis Yisrael, Asher Yishchad Shor Uchesev O'ed B'machaneh. Any person who slaughters an animal in the camp, or slaughters outside the camp, and did not bring it to the opening of the Ohel Moed, to the Mishkan, L'hakriv Karban L'Hashem, to offer it as a Karban to Hashem before the Mishkan of Hashem, Dam Yichashev. He has blood on his hands. He spilled blood. And he gets his chayv karis, a very severe punishment for this. And then it says, the manasher review Bnei Yisrael zivchayim. It's so that Bnei Yisrael will bring all of their karbanos that they slaughter al pnei asada on the face of the field. They shall bring them to Hashem, to the Mishkan, etc. That's the description you have in Vayikra Perek Yud Zayin. Then if you go to Devarim Perek Yud Beis, now I'm skipping. So this is really where we are in our order is in Devarim right now. Devarim Perek Yud Beis. This is pasuk Yud Gimel. It's chapter 12, pasuk 13. It says, "Amishamer lecha, you shall guard yourself, pen ta'ale olosecha, lest you offer your karban, your offering, in any place that you desire. You shouldn't do that. Ki im b'makom ashivchar Hashem b'achash v'techa. Rather, you must offer it in the place Hashem chooses, amongst one of the tribes. Sham ta'ale olosecha, there shall you offer your karban. V'sham ta'ase kosher nochi mitzaveka, and there you shall do everything that I told you." So that's the prohibition of offering karbanos outside the Beis HaMikdash. Those are the two different sources that we have. So ultimately, there's one chosen place for sacrifices, the Beis HaMikdash. It's interesting because the idea of building your own private altar is called a bama. A bama is a private altar, and there are actually times in history where you're allowed to build a bama. When Jews first entered into Eretz Yisrael, before the Beis HaMikdash was built, when the Mishkan had no set place, I'm simplifying the idea, but there were times during that period where they were allowed to build bamas. People could have private altars outside their house, in their backyard. Once the Beis HaMikdash was built, at that point, the bama, the private altar, became prohibited for all of history. It's no longer allowed to build a private bama. But there were times in history where Jews were allowed to offer private karbanos, which is an interesting thing. Once the Beis HaMikdash was built that very first time, the first Beis HaMikdash, at that point, it's prohibited to offer a karban anywhere outside that area. You must offer your karban only to Beis HaMikdash only. So no sacrifice is done in Silver Spring, Maryland. That's what we learned from there. So the question is why? Let's understand, like, what's so terrible about offering... The idea of a sacrifice itself needs its own discussion, which I think we've discussed, you know, a couple years back, because I'm not going to get into the idea of a sacrifice. But what's so bad, assuming that the sacrifice is an essential part of serving Hashem, why is it so terrible to offer one in your backyard? If I feel inspired, if I feel I want to connect, if I feel guilty because of a sin that I've done, if I feel I want to celebrate Yontif and bring a karban for Yontif, whatever it is, why does it have to be only in the Beis HaMikdash? Why can't I do it elsewhere?
Because it says,
correct.
People choose the place.
Okay,
not
good.
You.
Right, good. Okay, but I want to elaborate more on that. You're right. Okay. I want to elaborate more on that. To understand a little more what that means. But you're right. The Torah says only the place Hashem chooses. But again, why is Hashem set it up that way? I mean, why is Hashem wanted that only in that one place I choose do you bring karbanos? So there's many reasons given. I want to go through some of them. We'll talk about the most basic one first. I'll move to, I guess, more deeper explanations. The basic understanding is what the Torah itself tells us, Back in Parshas Achrimos, that first source I read to you, the Torah says, V'lo yizbechu, let's make sure I read the right pasuk here. So it says, L'man asher v'yum b'nei Yisrael zivcheim asher mizolchem p'nei sadeh. It said we should bring all of our sacrifices that we offer in the fields, like in the wilderness, and bring them to Hashem. And it says, V'lo yizbechu od es zivcheim l'se'irim. We shouldn't offer our sacrifices anymore to se'irim. Literally, se'irim means to goats. But most commentaries explain that se'irim here is a reference to Avodah Zarah, to demons, to other gods. The term Seir is used actually as a metaphor to refer to Avodah Zarah. You have that source used several times throughout Tanakh, that's Seirim. The idea of goats is actually used to represent Avodah Zarah. So the Torah says very clearly that we shall make sure we offer sacrifices only to the Mikdash, so that we don't offer sacrifices to Avodah Zarah, to idols. And that's what we're trying to avoid. And the meaning of this seems to be, it's a protection in that if you're in one place, with one focus on the one God, with a Kohen Gadol, and one altar, and all of Klal Yisrael focused on one focal point, that makes you think in your head, one God, only one God, and that's it. If everybody is, basically, it's a place where everyone would come, and Rashi actually quotes from the Medrash that even the non-Jews would come and they would comment, look at this place. You know, back in our homes, there's temples all over the place, people offer sacrifices everywhere, people eat different foods, there's many, many priests. But we have, you know, one Beis Hamikdash, and there's one Mizbeach, one altar, there's one Kohen. We all eat the same kind of food. And there's a focus that place and that whole atmosphere makes you focus on there's only one God. And that's what it does. Even if people started bringing sacrifices elsewhere, and their intent was for Hashem, but we can conceive that people start bringing, you know, they're having their own type of service. And eventually, practices can diverge and begin to vary. And each place soon becomes its own temple, worshiping its own style of God. But everything has this one focal point on Arbis and Mikdash, and is done in one way with one Kohen Gadol and one Mizbeach. That's a protection on the fact that there should be no services out there that diverge from serving Hashem. So that's the simple meaning of this pasuk, it seems. That's the simple meaning of this verse. But it's very interesting. Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch takes it literally when it says, "Don't offer sacrifices to Seirim." So again, we said Seirim really means goats, but most commentators understand it as other gods, demons of the like, other gods. Rav Hirsch actually says it really means goats. And he speaks to the idea of what it means to offer a sacrifice to goats. Like, what's that concept? I mean, goats, you know, were used as gods in some societies. We know we read about the Mitzrayim, and in Mitzrayim, the Egyptians used to worship their livestock. And that's why the Jews cannot sit down and eat in the same table as the Egyptians, you find in the Parsha, because they found it to be an abomination that we would sit there and eat their gods. So, can understand what that would mean to them. But so we do find people did worship goats. Rav Hirsch wants to explain, why is it that the idea of offering sacrifice to a goat is kind of like the model of idolatry? Why is that the term the Torah uses, and why is that we're trying to prevent? So Rav Hirsch, in his beautiful poetic way, as he always speaks. So Rav Hirsch writes, he says that the Seir, the goat, in the Torah is the representative of that sensuous animalism, which is uncontrolled wildness, lives out in the Midbar, in the wilderness, which is to have no place in the sphere of human lives, which is being built up upon the sanctuary of God's law of morality. So he always writes in a very poetic way. But the Seir, this idea of the he-goat, it's always used as an uncontrolled, wild, untamed animal. That's always the symbolism you find in the Torah of the he-goat. Esav is compared to a he-goat. You know, Esav's compared to a goat, and he's also somebody who's wild, and you can't tame Esav. He will not submit to Hashem. So Rav Hirsch says, when somebody decides to offer a sacrifice to the concept of the goat, so what it means is, he says there can be no greater contrast to the godly human ideal of the laws of morality in paying homage to which man gets near to God, than offering a sacrifice to a goat. He then continues, he says, that a person has the chance to get close to God in the sanctuary of his Torah. He can go to the Beis Hamikdash. He can attain proximity to Hashem. So a man who actually offers a man who offers a sacrifice to Hashem properly, so a man makes animalism, living uncontrolled out in the open, as you know, that he denies that. But he offers sacrifice to a goat. So you're taking animalism, you're taking the idea of living out in the wilderness, and denying the godly character of man. And essentially what you're doing is you're yielding, he says, you're yielding to your senses, and you're tearing up the very last fibers of the roots by which he was attached to the sphere of humans, specifically belonging to God. And he goes on and on and on. But the point that he makes is that if you're offering a sacrifice to a goat, what you're doing is saying that I am basically conceding myself to animal life. I'm saying that my greatest ideal is not the spiritual, it's not the godly, but it's animalism, it's materialism, it's physicality, it's lust, it's desires, being an animal, being a beast. That's what it means to offer sacrifice to a goat. Whereas a true sacrifice to God is putting aside the beast in ourselves and offering up, you know, and submitting to spirituality. When you're sacrificing to a goat, what that means is that you're submitting yourself to animalism. That's what you're doing. He says that he offers up an offering meant to be the symbolic expression of human personality to the ideal of animal life, commits a spiritual, sacrilegious murder. Because the Torah says that if you offer the sacrifices to the Se'irim, the Torah calls it dam shafach, he has spilled blood, it's murderous. So we don't view a real sacrifice as murder, we view it as a great mitzvah. But if you offer sacrifice to a goat, what you've done is you've spilled blood, but you've spilled blood for no purpose. You've spilled blood for something which is not productive. And that's considered, in the Torah's terms, equivalent to a murder. We don't just kill animals for no reason. If we have a real reason to kill animals, we do know we're allowed to shech them and eat them, we can offer them as karbanos. But to kill an animal and not have any ability to grow from that, you know, what you're doing is you're paying homage to animal life, as our first describes. You're living as an untamed beast, and you want to be an untamed beast, so that's actually considered a murderous act to the animal, and it goes in direct contrast to the purpose of a Jew. And that's what our first thing, everyone can look at this. This is in chapter 17 of Vayikra. This is first, so it's good to read his beautiful poetic language. That's the way he describes it. So he says that offering sacrifices out in the fields, out in the open, and especially offering it to goats. But again, it goes just the model of other gods. But the reason this is the model is because we're denying the fact that we're supposed to be subservient to Hashem. We're denying the fact that we can go beyond our world and beyond the wild, untamed, you know, world of beasts. And we're basically submitting ourselves to be subservient to the animal part of ourselves. That's how our verse describes it. How could you apply this to our own personal lives? I think there's a way to apply it. Because, you know, very often we do put forth our own self-sacrifice to indulge in things that are not spiritual. You know, the same way Rav Hirsch says, sacrificing to an animal is, you know, giving preference to your animal side. And showing your animal side to you is the ideal, is the most important. So when somebody sacrifices of themselves for indulgence of this world, to make money, but not for any good purpose, but just for their own self-gratification, so maybe that's a little bit of an expression of this, that we're putting everything on the line. We're sacrificing ourselves and our energy and our money and our time, but for ideals of Olam Hazeh of this world, not for ideals of Olam Haba of the next world. So I think that'd be a somewhat of a semblance of this concept, that we're giving up of our animals, of our money, to the goats. We're giving up our time and our energy to ideals of this world. So that's one explanation of this concept, of not bringing karbanos out in the wild or in our backyards, but limiting them only to Hashem's temple. Now on the positive side, and this is what other commentaries describe, the bringing a karban, the Beis Hamikdash itself, is what gives us the greatest benefit of the karban. Meaning that we said, if you take an animal and you slaughter it for no purpose, that is some level of murder. You've killed a life, you've spilled blood, and you're not gaining anything from it. We have no license to kill an animal for no reason. So when Hashem says you're allowed to bring karbanos, you can bring sacrifices, Hashem says, but you do it, but only if you're able to gain the greatest benefit out of it. Now, where do you get the greatest benefit out of it? Only in Hashem's Beis Hamikdash. Now, why is that? So there are a few explanations to this, why that is. One explanation is, the Sefer HaChinuch writes that the purpose of a karban typically is going to be for atonement, and if not for that, to bring you closer to Hashem. You know, either you bring a karban chatas, a sin offering, or an asham, a guilt offering, because you've done something wrong, or you might offer a shlamim or an ola, a voluntary offering to become closer to Hashem. Those are the two different style karbanos that we have. To truly gain from a karban, the goal is not to kill an animal. The goal is the intent and the focus, the feeling and the emotion that go along with it. Like for instance, the Ramban writes that when you're bringing a sin offering, so you're supposed to kind of view yourself that you're deserving of that treatment. Being that you've wronged Hashem, maybe you should be the one who's slaughtered. You should be burnt on the Mizbeach. But Hashem in His kindness gave us a way to get out of it by we kind of vicariously live through the animal. And when it comes to even a voluntary offering that we're trying to bring to get close to Hashem through the offering, so we're supposed to kind of view ourselves, that we're giving of ourselves to rise to Hashem. Same way the animal is killed and is burnt and the smoke goes to Hashem and everything, and the blood is sprinkled. So we view ourselves that, you know, we're trying to give of our lives, of our energy, of everything that we have towards Hashem. Now to have such emotion and have such focus, have such a devotion in a karban, you have the right state of mind. If you try to do this, like, you know, it's down the block somewhere, so how are you going to get to that state of mind? How are you going to get so focused? If the purpose of the karban is to have the right kavana, so where does one get to that right kavana? So Hashem prohibited karbanos other places because they don't do the trick. They're inferior. If you try to do this on Arcola Avenue, or even on North Belgrade or Lamberton, it's not going to work. Because you're not in the atmosphere. Again, it'll work to some degree, perhaps, but you're not in the atmosphere where you can have the full focus and devotion on what you're doing. And at that point, if you're not gaining the full benefit of the karban, you're just needlessly killing an animal. That's what you're doing. So Hashem says, you're allowed to bring a karban, that's okay to do, but only if you're willing to derive the greatest benefit from it, which means you're going to have the opportunity, you're setting yourself up for success. You're in the atmosphere where you're going to be totally focused and devoted on what you're doing, and that's in the Beis HaMikdash itself. Other places, karbanos just don't quite cut it. And as I would just relate it to a very practical lesson for us as well. We have the concept of davening inside a shul. And the truth is, halachically, even if there's not a minyan going on, there's still the benefit of davening in a shul versus davening in your house. And the reason for that is very much this idea. It's the atmosphere. When you're davening in a random place, so are you set up to be totally focused on what you're doing? So a lot of times, just the facts of life are that we can't make it to shul to daven, and that's fine. But the concept of being in a shul, it's because you're in a place which is devoted to Hashem, devoted to tefillah, devoted to having focus on your davening, and therefore there's a benefit in davening in a shul, with or without a minyan. Obviously, a minyan's always great to have, but even without a minyan, to daven in a shul, in a room designated, is a very important thing. And beyond that, even in our homes, there's that idea of having a place to daven in the house. Instead of just davening in any random corner you can find, that one place in the house where you daven is considered a benefit to davening. Because, and one reason would be because you've made that place. This is where I go to greet Hashem, and therefore that atmosphere helps me focus. Yeah? For women as well. Technically, yeah, but again, you have to put everything has to be put in perspective. I mean, if you're going to make it to shul, what are you not doing? You know? Certainly, for weekday davening, the customs women do not come to shul. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the idea of devotion and focus, I mean, shul gives it to anybody, and that's a fact of life. It's just a matter of what are you putting aside to make it here? And that's really the question, usually. But the concept is true regardless, I think. That's certainly true. It's a good question, though. Thank you. Additionally, we talk about having a place which is set aside for serving Hashem, such as the Beis HaMikdash. The Sefer Chinuch also writes, he says that the Beis HaMikdash became such a special holy place. So number one, it's because Hashem designated it, which we'll talk about more in a minute. Number two, it's because you're in an atmosphere, I mean, you have the building, you have the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you have the Aron, you have the Mizbeach, you have the Kohanim. Obviously, the atmosphere itself very much lends to it being a place where you can devote yourself to Hashem. But more than that, the Sefer HaChinuch writes that if karbanos could have been offered anywhere, then you're actually drawing away, you're detracting from the holiness of the Beis HaMikdash itself. Why is that? Because a place where you repeatedly do the same service of Hashem over and over and over again, that place becomes more and more holy. The holiness seeps into the actual area. So if you're offering sacrifices in your backyard, so the sacrifice of the Beis HaMikdash become much more limited. And the Beis HaMikdash itself doesn't even get the full stamp of holiness, of Kedusha, that it could have had. But Hashem says, no, you have to offer sacrifices only in this place, always. Which means that the service of Hashem there is going to be constant, ongoing. It's like if you want to try to, etch into something. You keep, etching away at it, and it goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So it's the same thing, the Beis HaMikdash, the more avoda which is done, the more service of Hashem which incurs there, that's going to increase and reinforce the Kedusha and bring more of the Shekhinah, more of Hashem's presence into the Beis HaMikdash itself. So part of this mitzvah is to try to reinforce the holiness of the Beis HaMikdash. If we could do karbanos anywhere we want, so we'd lose out because we wouldn't have this special place. It wouldn't be as special as it is because it wouldn't have that same level of holiness and of the Hashem Shechina, which is there. You know, different commentaries ask the question. It's a very interesting question. Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, has zero holiness nowadays. If you knew where it was, you can go there, you can sit down and read a book, you can do whatever you want. You can have, you know, you can graze cows there, whatever you want to do. There's no holiness to it. Har Abayis, the Temple Mount, the Beis HaMikdash, maintains its holiness even to this very day. So we would think, well, Har Sinai should be so holy. Hashem came there and he spoke and there was this great revelation and all the Jews gathered on the mountain and Moshe Rabbeinu came down holding the Luchos. We would think it's such a holy place. Why isn't there holiness there anymore? But the Beis HaMikdash, you know, it's also a holy place, but why does that maintain its Kedusha and Har Sinai doesn't? So one answer given is really this concept. What makes a place holy is not a one-time event. It's the ongoing service of Hashem which occurs there day in and day out. That's what gives it its holiness. Har Sinai was a one-time event. It came and it left, and it was an incredible event that left its impression or history, and is one of the most important events that the Jews ever experienced. Not the most important event, but the actual location itself is a one-time thing. So holiness comes and holiness goes. But in the Beis HaMikdash, we have service happening day in and day out, every single day, for hundreds and hundreds of years. There's a constant service of Hashem, and that's a Kedusha which remains. That's something which remains in a person. In our own lives, and on our level, you know, we know that one-time experiences are inspirational, but they don't necessarily change the person until we take it and apply it on a day-to-day basis. If we do something day in and day out, that changes us. A one-time experience we can look back to and be inspired by, but it doesn't change us necessarily. You have to be able to take that experience and move with it. So on a certain level, the idea of offering karbanos only in the Beis HaMikdash is in order to create the environment we're looking for. We said before, you want the environment that will maximize the idea of the sacrifice. So that's an environment of holiness, an environment of Beis HaMikdash. Beyond that, to create such an intense, you know, powerful environment, so that environment requires that the avoda is totally devoted to that place, because that helps the Kedusha, the presence of Hashem, the holiness to seep in and to remain there permanently. So again, back to what, you know, the example we gave before, on a small level, you know, we do have this in a shul, in a Beis Medrash, in that being that it's a place devoted to service of Hashem, Hashem's presence should dwell there in a more powerful way than elsewhere. And therefore, because there's a constant avoda happening, that should allow us to access Hashem even more in those locations. So that's on a miniature level, yeah.
So I feel like there's a chicken and egg question. Like, do people daven there because it's holy, like the you know, the hotel?
Right.
Or is it holy because people are daven there? So I don't know which one is first.
I mean, I think they're both true. I mean, the first certainly is Hashem designated it to be the place. So I would say that Hashem determined this place has the potential to be a place of holiness, therefore that's the place to go to. But ultimately, what builds up the Kedusha there is the constant avoda happening. But step one certainly is Hashem said this is the place to go to. Hashem designated it. Yeah.
Why does it say in the Chumash all the time, "B'makom Hashem yivchar Hashem"? Why doesn't it say Yerushalayim?
Right. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's a good question.
Shalem
is in the
Chumash.
Right. But why it doesn't tell you, we don't know where that place is, it's not much later in Tanakh. Right. I don't know why that is. I'm not sure why that is.
Well, we say Yaakov had this dream there, and
right.
Abraham brought Yitzchak on Tahara Moriah to be sacrificed.
Right. When it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, he never tells you it's going to be in that place until much later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure the answer to that question. It's a good question. Another point which is cited by different commentaries is that when one was able to build their own altar in their own house, you could build bamos, so that didn't give, they gave you a reason not to go to Yerushalayim. We were trying to build up this place called the Beis HaMikdash. Number one, to build up its Kedusha, but also, we gained from being there. Every single Jew had reason to go to Yerushalayim several times a year. Man, woman, and even child. You know, everyone had their times to go to Yerushalayim. And Hashem wants us to have those times because being in a place like Yerushalayim was inspirational to the person. We'd go there, we would draw in inspiration, chizik, we'd recharge ourselves spiritually, we'd unite with the rest of the Jewish people there, we'd see the Kohanim, we'd see the Avoda, we'd bring our own sacrifices, and we'd come back, you know, supercharged as Jews. That's how it was like. Besides running the risk of idolatry, having an altar in your own backyard takes away reason to go to Yerushalayim. We don't have the reason to go there anymore. We know that the Torah obligates us many times a year. There's Aliyah L'Regel, going up for Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Everyone has obligatory karbanos they had to bring. We had to eat our Maaser Sheni, our second tithe in Yerushalayim. We had to bring Bikurim, our first fruits. We had to, there are just so many more things. The fourth year of our vineyards, all the grapes had to go to Yerushalayim to be eaten. And there were so many reasons why a person had to go to Yerushalayim. But the more we focus on our own backyards, and we serve Hashem through our own backyards, so that would take away the opportunity to go to Yerushalayim. So the exposure to that environment of holiness, to the people that were there, to the tzaddikim that gathered around Sanhedrin met there. So you have the greatest scholars of the Jewish people sitting there at the Beis HaMikdash. You had the Kohanim doing their service. And you had the unity of all the Jews gathering around. All of us who go there even nowadays to Yerushalayim find it inspirational. Now, we don't even have Beis HaMikdash there. Imagine what it was like if you were there with the Beis HaMikdash. You know, it would be much, much more inspiring. But everybody, there's nobody who goes up to the Kotel doesn't get inspired by being in a place like that, being around all the Jews together in unity. We're all inspired by it. So witnessing the actual Beis HaMikdash in action was an incredible experience that we all needed to have. So Torah sets it up that we have to journey to Yerushalayim regularly throughout our year, throughout our lives, so that we have that inspiration. If we had bamos, we have these personal private altars in our own yards, that would discourage us and limit us from going to Yerushalayim. Now on our level, so we don't have the Beis HaMikdash to go to nowadays, but we have different things which happen throughout our year, which are also points of inspiration, of connecting with Hashem. A yomtiv, I view that way. You know, Hashem sets up in the calendar yomim tovim, which are times we're supposed to connect more and be inspired by. It won't be the same intensity as the Beis HaMikdash, but there's regular visits from Hashem that we have during these times of year. Some people have, a friend, a Rebbe, a teacher, a mentor, which they connect with periodically, which they always feel inspired by. Right? So having reason to speak to that person, or attend a class, or go to a certain shul, or go to a certain person's house and interact with them, is inspiring. And to have those experiences throughout our weeks or months or years, it's very, very significant because that's our opportunity to recharge and to connect. So the Beis HaMikdash was the model of this. To be able to go connect to such a holy place several times a year was a necessity for every single Jew's growth. And if a person doesn't have that, we're missing out. So part of the prohibition of bamos, part of the prohibition of making private altars is to encourage us that we have to make these times every single year. We go to the Beis HaMikdash and we connect with it. And then there's one more point I want to add in. And this is a very important fundamental concept, not just for this mitzvah, but really for understanding all halach and all mitzvahs. This point made by the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel points out, and this is what we mentioned before, that the Beis HaMikdash ultimately was the Makom HaShivchar Hashem, he pointing out. It's the place where Hashem chose. So we can say all the reasons in the world why it's a good place to go, and why it's important for us to go there, and do our service there, and bring sacrifices there. But ultimately the answer is that Hashem deemed that to be the right place to go to. That's the bottom line. Bottom line is Hashem said this is the place you have to go to do your service. And the way that Abarbanel expresses it, he says, Kiwa bocher v'yodea ha-makom, hanir tzeilav. Hashem is the one who chose, and he knows the place which pleases him. V'lo atam, you don't know the place that pleases Hashem. You think, well, my backyard is wonderful. I can see the forest, and we see a lot of wildlife back there, and it's very inspiring. There's azalea bushes that blossom in the spring, and I love seeing the beauty and the colors. But Hashem knows the place that pleases Him, and you don't. Umalachem levakish makom acher. And why should you seek out a different place to serve Hashem? Asher hu lebachar bo, that He didn't choose. And that service that you do will not be successful because it's not Hashem's choice. It's not what Hashem selected. So this is something which I think is so relevant to so much of being a Jew. Because Hashem knows what He wants and what He desires. That's why Hashem knows that. Hashem is beyond us. Hashem is infinite. And the purpose of being a Jew and doing mitzvot is to please Hashem. Ultimately, why are we doing mitzvot? Because Hashem said so. We want to please Hashem. We want to do what Hashem asks of us. So Hashem says the Beis HaMikdash is the place for sacrifices. This is what pleases Me. So who are we to decide that He'll be pleased elsewhere? And that's what Barbanel is pointing out. So we'll say my intentions are so genuine. You know, I really feel inspired and emotional. I want to connect. And I think this will be the blessed place. I want to go off to the beach. And I love seeing the waves and the sand. And I can see the seagulls flying. And there I feel so spiritual. And there on the beach is where I want to offer sacrifices. So the thoughts are nice thoughts. There are good intentions in those thoughts. And they might be very sincere and genuine. But if you're trying to please somebody else, and they're not pleased by that, they're not doing the trick. That's all about us. What makes us feel inspired. I think that there's a notion which we pick up in modern society, which is that religion is about what makes us feel inspired. And certainly we as Jews believe we should feel inspired, but that's not how we view religion. Religion is that which pleases God. What does God want from us? I think of, again, the American notion very much, at least in the more secular parts of America, is that religion is what makes you feel good and it makes you feel inspired as a person. So the beach makes you feel inspired. So why can't I go to the beach on Yom Kippur and sit back in the waves and reflect? Well, that makes you feel inspired. Is that what Hashem wants out of you, Yom Kippur? So we would think not. The an analogy I like to always give is that you picture a couple that was married for 40 years, right? And every time they go to get ice cream, so the husband loves chocolate ice cream, the wife likes vanilla, right? He can't understand, why does she not like chocolate ice cream? Chocolate ice cream is the best. And every time they go to ice cream, he says, want some chocolate? Says, no, I don't like chocolate, I like vanilla. So it's their 40th anniversary, he says, I'm going to buy her ice cream, right? He goes to the store, and he gets her a big tub of chocolate ice cream. He brings it home, honey, happy anniversary, I bought you some ice cream. And she looks at it, and she says, I told you 1,000 times. It's nice that you thought about me, but I can't stand chocolate ice cream. From his perspective, he can't understand, how can you not like chocolate? Chocolate's the best. He can't figure it out. He can't fathom the fact that someone cannot like chocolate. So when you're trying to please somebody else, you can't look at your own desires, look at the other person's desires. That's the analogy. I personally like vanilla ice cream, if you want to know. But, I don't like chocolate ice cream. But so Hashem expresses his will to us. Hashem says, I want you to serve me. I want you to serve me here. In Yerushalayim, on Har Habayis, on the Temple Mount. That's what I want it to be. You don't understand that? You think it's better to serve me elsewhere? You like chocolate ice cream? Hashem, I don't like chocolate ice cream. So you offer me a sacrifice in your backyard. It's a nice thought, but that doesn't please me. That's not what I want. I don't enjoy that. That's not what's going to connect you to me. It might be the best intention in the world, but it's not pleasing to Hashem. It's like giving the woman chocolate ice cream. That's what it's like. It's not pleasing to Hashem. So in all mitzvahs, very often we get to a mitzvah and we don't really understand. I don't understand why or how, or why is this so important to Hashem? I do it this way and not that way, and I don't feel this one so inspiring or emotional. I'd rather do it a different way. So if it's about what makes us feel inspired or emotional, so we're right. I don't feel inspired by doing this mitzvah, so it doesn't make me emotional. It doesn't make me feel connected. But so pleasing another, it's not about us, it's about the other person and what they want. And Hashem told us, this is what I want. I want to have sacrifices done only in this place. I know, like the Barbanel said, Hashem knows the place that pleases him, and you don't know the place that pleases Hashem. Hashem says, I'm pleased by sacrifices in Yerushalayim, but not sacrifices in Maryland. That's what Hashem says. And therefore, we can apply that to all mitzvos. If the goal is to please Hashem, this is what brings success. The Barbanel says, you bring a karban elsewhere, it won't be successful, being that it's the opposite of God's desire. Because the success we're looking for in serving Hashem, in a karban in particular, and serving Hashem in general, is that we're going to please Hashem. And Hashem, therefore, will want to connect with us. And with the best intention in the world, if we do something that Hashem has already expressed to us several times, it's not pleasing to me, it doesn't matter how inspired you might feel, if it's not pleasing to Hashem, it's not going to do the trick. So that's the point that Barbanel makes, and that's really, to me, it's the message of this mitzvah, and it's the message in all mitzvahs, that we as Jews, our goal is to not do what makes us feel good, but to do what Hashem wants out of us. That's always our goal. So just to review for a second, the prohibition is not to bring karbanos. You can't bring sacrifices elsewhere outside the Beis Hamikdash. Only in the temple itself to bring karbanos. We said, first and foremost, it's a protection against idolatry. We don't want all sorts of various services happening throughout the world. Rav Hirsch spoke about the idea of offering sacrifices out in the fields as kind of submitting ourselves to the animalistic desires within. We discussed that the environment of the Beis Hamikdash is what gives us the best ability to connect and to have the proper intent in a karban, and that's the purpose of it all. If we slaughter an animal for no reason, it's a murderous act in some ways. And then we said that the repeated service which is done in the Beis Hamikdash, by virtue of the fact nothing's done outside the Beis Hamikdash, that gives its unique character of Kedusha and Shechina, which is there. We spoke about the idea that we have to have reason to go to the Beis Hamikdash. If we have bamos, if we have personal private altars, then it takes away our reason to go there, to feel those inspiring moments. And ultimately, all this aside, this is what Hashem said to do. Hashem said, this is the place, Asher Yivchar Hashem, this is where I desire it to happen. Even though your goal in every sacrifice is to serve me and to do my bidding, that's not what pleases me, it's not what I want, and therefore it's not going to get you anywhere. Any questions?